My guest at this time is Pete Hegseth. He is a veteran of the Iraq War and the Afghan War. He's also the CEO of Concerned Veterans for America. We want to get his insights now on what we're seeing in terms of the U.S. response to the threat posed by ISIS in the northern part of Iraq. And Pete, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
A lot of people last week, of course, clamoring for U.S. actions to stop the genocide that was emerging there. Action is being taken, targeted limited airstrikes, as well as humanitarian efforts. What's your take on the scope of this operation and what the specifics are of this operation? How much do we know? How much more do we need to know about what's going on here?
Sure. The scope is right now very limited. The president has laid out a humanitarian mission, a mission to degrade ISIS slightly so that they can't threaten the Erbil, the capital of the Kurdish region in Iraq, and then it also is tailored toward protecting American personnel. So it is very narrowly tailored right now. The question is whether or not it is enough to turn back an ISIS threat, which is growing and gathering. So the narrow scope is what the president has laid out. But I know there are many on the ground there that believe that a more concerted effort will be necessary to change dynamics. So you can provide humanitarian support, you can protect American personnel. It doesn't get rid of the growing gathering threat that is ISIS.
What's your take on it? What are you hearing from other veterans? Obviously, you and your colleagues, other veterans, spent a lot of time, lost a lot of colleagues there. And now, obviously, all of that seems to be greatly jeopardized, if not much of it lost at this point. So what should be the scope of this operation?
Well, you know, a lot of mixed opinions, obviously, based on different experiences in Iraq. But my personal opinion is that what was invested there was worth fighting for. And we had a good outcome out of the Iraq surge. We had a possible more politically stable environment, a more capable Iraqi army. But when we left and didn't leave a residual force and left and gave away our diplomatic leverage, you saw Maliki hedge toward Iran and start to marginalize his opponents. And then when ISIS made the march on Iraqi elements with no U.S. support, they faded away. So my belief is that Iraq remains an important place to protect American interests. But even if setting aside the war, even setting aside what we invested there for a decade, at this point, regardless how you feel about the war, ISIS is a well-equipped radical organization that has stated its desire to attack the American homeland and our interests. It is in many ways a worse environment than pre-9/11 Afghanistan. And so we have national security interests in going on the offensive to push them back. Now, that's where the debate occurs, because if we acknowledge that threat, how far do we go, right? So far, it's been limited strikes. I would argue it should be more air support, more support to proxy forces as far as weapons, and potentially some level of boots on the ground if you're serious about the threat. But right now, this president has laid out a very narrow approach.
What's it going to take, in your estimation? You just talked about it a little bit, but what's it going to take to eradicate the ISIS threat? We know they're well-financed. They're getting a lot of recruits, and sadly, they've got a lot of our equipment since they took it from the Iraqi army.
Yes, they do. There's a big difference between degrade and defeat ISIS. In order to degrade and stop their momentum, you're going to have to continue airstrikes. You're going to have to send equipment to the Peshmerga, and you're going to need to embed advisors. It's not enough just to have advisors on post gathering intelligence. You need to have them targeting in the field alongside indigenous forces, whether that's the Peshmerga or the Iraqi army. So that, to me, is the degrade scenario. That's how you push them back from some of the city centers, or some of them, but not all of them, and sort of lessen the stress on the central government and the Kurdish region. If you want to defeat them, if you believe this is a threat that is too significant to ignore and just degrade, you're going to need U.S. boots on the ground. That's just a fact. Now, whether that's divisions, I don't know that exact number. I leave that to generals who do the war planning. But significant level of troops on the ground would be required to displace ISIS from what they've gathered so far. I think the estimates of number of ISIS fighters is underrepresented for what they hold. They've got more equipment, more money, and more people than I think in many ways we estimate. It's a serious undertaking, which is why I think the president has responded the way he is, if reluctantly, and he acknowledges that this is a growing and gathering threat that just can't be wished away, and it'll take some serious effort, either with boots or without boots, to dislodge them.
Pete, without U.S. involvement on the ground, obviously our best hope at right now is the airstrikes and supplying the Kurdish elements as best we can. They were obviously on the ropes until the airstrikes began last week. Their position seems to be a little bit stronger at this point. But if they can't hold, and if ISIS barrels right through them, how far do they go?
How far do they go? I mean, they go as they look at how far they've gone already. So I think they consolidate their support in the north. You see substantial massacres, which is what you've already seen, of Christian and other ethnic minorities. These ISIS folks are modern day Nazis. I mean, they are dedicated to killing anyone who doesn't believe exactly what they believe and exterminating them. So you would see substantial consolidation of gains in the north, and then I think you would see a renewed focus on Baghdad, a renewed focus, which would be difficult for them because they've got more support, obviously, in the areas they've been in, which are Sunni areas. The Kurdish region is more difficult. Baghdad is the seat of power and where the Iraqi army is. But if they can threaten the Peshmerga, that demonstrates how serious of a force they are. The Peshmergas, you know, historically have been excellent fighters. They're low on equipment, which hopefully us supporting them and providing more resources will bolster them. But there's really, I mean, no limit regionally to where they could go if we ignore this threat.
And given where U.S. sentiment is right now, and certainly where the president's sentiment is, the idea of U.S. boots on the ground is very unlikely at this point. So you're looking more at the degrade than defeat option. How far can they be degraded? How long can that continue before something breaks one way or the other?
That's the million-dollar question. I mean, it really does depend on the longevity of these strikes. How much our American advisors that are currently there are empowered to move forward and paint targets and be involved in that process. So I think we could, with air support and with advisors and providing weapons to our proxy forces, we could degrade and deny them for a substantial amount of time. The problem is you've got a lot of places where they can still plot, train, and execute. And the fear for us as Americans or Western Europeans is that you've got over, you know, hundreds of Americans and many, many hundreds of Western Europeans with passports who have traveled to Syria and Iraq through Turkey, and we don't have a full account of how many there are getting training, getting intelligence, getting expertise, and then heading back to their home country. That's what makes this such a scary scenario and why pushing them back and denying them safe haven is so significant. So I don't think degrading them is sufficient. Ultimately, if you do that for too long, you're creating a de facto Islamic state between the borders of Iraq and Syria, which is nothing but bad news. So the longer we wait, the more we defer the problem, the worse the consequences are down the road, which is why I hope this administration, in light of this, will take this more seriously and make some tough choices, but that's not been in their DNA so far.
Last question from the vets you've talked to. How much stomach do you think there is for going back in?
Boy, as much as I regret to admit it, not a whole lot of stomach. I mean, you don't hear a whole lot of people talk. Now, I will say that is coming from the general public. The general public doesn't have a whole lot of stomach for it. When you talk to veterans who have been on the ground, especially combat veterans, they understand the nature of the enemy. They understand the price that was paid and the reason we were there. I think they also look at the nature of this enemy. And whereas in some cases in Iraq, for a while, we were fighting sort of a local insurgency, a Ba'athist insurgency, they recognize this state, the Islamic State, is an international jihadist all-star group that has a lot more ambition than just Iraq. And I think in that case, understand that it will take a real investment to get it done. So this idea of war weariness is something that the media likes to perpetuate. I think the folks that are usually least war weary are the folks who have seen war, not because we want it, but because we understand how if you don't meet these threats head on, they just manifest themselves more dangerously. So, yeah, it's difficult. Yeah, there's some people who don't want to see it happen, but I don't think that should necessarily be the calculus of our political leaders, who should have the security of America in mind and make a decision based on that.
Pete, we'll leave it there. Thank you, sir, very much for being with us.
Thanks a lot.
Pete Hegseth is a veteran of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. He's currently CEO of Concerned Veterans for America. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.